This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show, we're going to be talking about the new Pixar movie, Inside Out. We're also going to be talking about the Sundance favorite, Dope, and a couple smaller movies like The Stranger, The Connection, Hungry Hearts, and The Yes Men Are Revolting. I will also be talking about some entertainment news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and of course, the world-famous DVD Roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. That also works for Instagram, fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to find me on Twitter, you can go to twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
I'm going to take your lead, Ron Burgundy, and go right into the news. We've had some big movie news recently, entertainment news and movie news. There's only some smaller stories, but some that really did catch my eye. The first one is Rob Zombie, who is a very talented artist. He's going to be directing a new movie, and it's going to be a Groucho Marx biopic, which really surprised me because when I think of Groucho Marx, Rob Zombie's like the last person I'm going to think about. I mean, like, as bad as Halloween and Halloween 2 were, at least it made sense. It was a horror movie and Rob Zombie's into horror elements, and I would expect him at some point to want to remake like White Zombie or something like that. No, he's doing a Groucho Marx biopic, which of course immediately makes me wonder who Sherry Moon Zombie's going to play, because he can't do a movie without casting his wife. I mean, it's just her roles have gotten bigger and bigger and more significant in all of his films. I mean, she was just sort of the side player in House of a Thousand Corpses and The Devil's Rejects. And then in the Halloween movies, she was expanded into these ridiculous, unnecessarily overblown roles. And then she was in Lords of Salem as the lead, which actually she wasn't bad. Of all the movies she was in, I think Lords of Salem was okay because it didn't take a whole lot of acting. Hopefully she plays Harpo so she doesn't have to speak. Look what he did to Michael Myers in the Halloween movies. Who's going to be molesting young Groucho in this movie? How exactly is modern white trash going to fit into the story like the Halloween movies? Speaking of Halloween movies, they're making another Halloween movie. And it's so funny because the continuity of this series is so in the toilet anyways. And I'm not even talking about the outlier of Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, which is a fantastic film, by the way, starring Tom Atkins and Tom Atkins' mustache. I'm talking about just the original run of Halloween. You had the Halloween, Halloween 2, Season of the Witch is on its own. And then you had the Halloween 4, 5, and 6, which followed its own continuity and then got really bizarre with Paul Rudd and some weird cult. And then they reinfused the franchise with Halloween H2O, which brought back Jamie Lee Curtis and then kind of ignored 4 through 6. And then there was the direct sequel to that, which is Halloween Resurrection, which was terrible, but not as terrible as when they rebooted it with Rob Zombies. I don't know what they're calling it Halloween Returns, which I think is the dumbest title ever, because doesn't Halloween return every year? I understand the return of Michael Myers or Michael Myers Returns, but Halloween Returns, guaranteed there will be a Halloween every year. We never miss it. It's like December 25th. Christmas always happens. There's very little detail right now as to whether this is going to be consistent with the Michael Myers originals. And even then you're dealing with two different divergent timelines, or if it's going to be consistent with the Rob Zombie version, or they're just going to reboot it. But it's going to be directed by Marcus Dunstan, who did The Collector and The Collection. And those actually are pretty decent movies. The second one, I think it's The Collection, isn't nearly as good as The Collector. But at least those are innovative, and they're not just torture porn, and they're not just white trash noise that Rob Zombie gave us with his Halloween movies. So I guess, in a way, I'm kind of curious to see where this goes, but there's a lot of bear traps that can fall into. These horror movie remakes have never been solid in the last 10 years. There have been a lot of problems with them, so we'll see. Speaking of horror movies, I guess this is marginally a horror movie. You know, I love horror movies. I've always loved horror movies. Ever since I was a kid, I watched tons of horror movies in October. Generally, my horror movie watching, with the exception of major releases that come out, like Poltergeist, which was terrible, but when that came out a couple weeks ago, I had to go see it because I'm a film critic and I got to cover the current movies. But I really throw behind horror movies in October. I sometimes watch as many as 60 or 70 in the course of the month of October. Occasionally, they're blips. Like, I watched a bunch of Hammer horror movies this last weekend because of Christopher Lee. I wanted to kind of give him a send-off in my own little way. But there's a marginally associated horror movie, Hotel Transylvania 2. That has a new trailer. I'm not actually going to play it in the trailer park, but I'm going to quickly mention this movie because they sent me s'mores. I got this tube that has graham crackers and chocolate and marshmallows and sticks. And it says, oh, Hotel Transylvania 2. And you can go to Hotel T2, that hashtag. And you can go to the Hotel Transylvania website to go check it out. They sent me chocolate. You want to get me to talk about your movie? Send me chocolate. I'll talk about it. I mean, it's my time of the month. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Speaking of Rob Zombie, we got the white trash music playing in the background. The first one's not a very common type of trailer I play on the show. This is a fascinating experiment, in my opinion. And this is for A Deadly Adoption. It is actually a TV movie, and it is airing this weekend on Lifetime. Saturday, June 20th, 8 p.m. It's probably going to be broadcast a couple more times and probably next week, depending on how well it does. This weekend, ratings will come in Monday or so. This stars Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig in a Lifetime original movie.
The agency called and they have a new birth mother they want us to meet. Guys are so nice. Believe in me, I'm with them. I can't tell you how happy you've made us. And you're going to have a perfect life too one day, I promise. I hope it's in a town like this with a family like yours. What does she want with us?
I don't know.
Robert doesn't love you. He told me so. He loves me.
Now, what's interesting about this film is they made this in secret, and they were trying to keep it under wraps for as long as they could. And I don't know how much of this is actual marketing and how much of this actually is what really happened, but it was leaked a couple months ago that this project existed. And they apparently shot it in secret. It's them doing kind of a straight version of a Lifetime original movie. There's a big debate. Is it a parody or is it a real movie? I think it really is. I think what they're doing is they're basically making a crappy Lifetime movie, but they know they're doing it. It has a real feel like The Boy Next Door, which was that terrible Jennifer Lopez movie earlier this year. But that movie, I think they honestly thought they were making a good thriller, and it comes off as ridiculous. I think this one, they know it's ridiculous, but they're playing it straight. It's not Sharknado, because it's not tongue-in-cheek and winking at the audience. It's them playing it straight, and it's absurd because it's just a crappy Lifetime original movie. But ultimately, if you like crappy Lifetime movies, you can probably watch it and love it, unironically. The next one I want to talk about is Kung Fu Panda 3, and it opens on January 29th. Let's just play the trailer.
Who are you?
I'm Lee Shan. I'm looking for my son.
You lost your son?
Yes, many years ago.
I lost my father.
I'm very sorry.
Thank you.
Well, good luck to you.
I hope you find your son.
And I hope you find your father.
Both Kung Fu Panda movies, 1 and 2, from the trailer, I thought they would be terrible, and they both ended up being one of my favorite movies of each year. But both times, they were big summer movies. I think one opened in June or July, and the second one opened in May, I believe. But this one opens on January 29th, which generally, for anyone who knows anything about movie release dates, that's an odd time to release a big $150 million movie. There's supposed to be 6 of these. They've actually said that there should be 6 in this whole story. But going from a summer release date to January just seems odd. Now, maybe they're trying to cash in on the fact that American Sniper did extremely well in January, but this is not a January-type movie. You don't expect a $90 million opening, which American Sniper did get in January, but will it translate? This is so far removed from American Sniper. Maybe 2016 is going to be a year of experimental release dates, because you got Batman vs. Superman coming out in March, and that's a summer tentpole movie. That release date scares the bejeebus out of me. Even though this looks kind of cute, it scares me to death that this is actually getting a January release. It might be as good as The Nut Job. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the movies Dope and Hungry Hearts.
Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We're going to be talking about Dope, which it's funny, is the opening of Dope in the film. It defines it, the multiple versions of it, because dope can mean drugs. Dope can be an idiot. Dope can also be cool. You know, if you're like me and you're hip and with the lingo with the kids, because I'm dope. I'm also fat, P-H-A-T. I'm just using random 90s hip hop terminology to make myself sound doper than I really am. I am not dope at all. I am also not fat. I am fat, F-A-T. I am probably not P-H-A-T, although I keep telling myself that I am. And if you've seen me oiled up without my shirt on, you probably know that I'm pretty dope. Anyways, in Dope, a high school geek from the bottoms of L.A. finds himself saddled with a bag of drugs he has to sell to save his life.
I'm from a poor, crime-filled neighborhood, raised by a single mother, don't know my dad, blah, blah. It's cliche.
Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Malcolm Adekambi. I'm a straight-A student with nearly perfect SAT scores.
I play in a punk band with my friends, and I'm a 90s hip-hop geek.
It is time we started expanding our horizons.
We're not going to a drug dealer's birthday party.
Don't make flop.
Do you have what I left in the backpack?
Did he actually say I'll kill you and your friends if you don't get rid of these drugs, or just you?
This was a big hit at Sundance, and there's certainly a lot of energy to it. It's not what I expected when I first saw the trailer or the poster. It has a certain feel of Dear White People, which came out last year. Not as much of a social commentary. I mean, Dear White People was a huge social commentary movie. This one is a little bit more of a straightforward comedy / character study of this kid. The gist of the film is this main kid and his two friends are big fans of 90s hip hop, and they're steeped in the 90s hip hop culture. He's got a high top, a hairstyle, and they've got the colorful clothes, and the one girl who's, of course, as the thing, the girl is, it's the friend. There's three of them. One of them's a girl, but she's a lesbian. And I'm like, that's really not terribly original. The black butch lesbian in the 90s. That, it doesn't take place in the 90s, but they're steeped in the 90s. That's the thing with this movie. There's some really cool and innovative stuff, but then there's stuff where they just fall right into cliche. But the movie itself also feels like a movie from the 90s. You know, you see movies that feel like a movie, like It Follows, being a horror movie, felt like a movie from the 80s. And a lot of Ty West stuff feels like stuff from the early 80s, especially House of the Devil. This one is, even though it takes place in contemporary times, because they're talking about Bitcoins and iPhones and they're using the internet in a modern sense, it feels and it's paced and it's presented very much like a 90s movie. So I kind of respect in that way. It has some very funny moments. It has some really funny lines. The biggest problem I have with this movie is it sometimes gets in its own way. It's definitely got a message that gets completely mixed up and muddled. And by the time the movie was over, I was like, hold on a second. What's that trying to say? I really am confused as to what the final statement the movie's trying to make. At times kind of focuses too much on its title because it's Dope. And so they're trying to do a play on words, but they're also trying to make the drug angle a focus, where it's really just kind of a MacGuffin just to get through the film. And it has moments where it suddenly gets very hardcore, almost like a Boys in the Hood kind of movie. But then there's no payoff to the things that happen when there really should be on a realistic basis. and there's a lot of unanswered questions. So I think the movie has a lot of energy, and it's cool, and it has some very funny moments, and it's definitely watchable, but it also doesn't, by just stumbling over itself, trying to do too much at once, and it's very ambitious, but it doesn't always work. But I'm still going to say that it kind of rocks, simply because it's a different enough movie, and it definitely has its moments.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Hungry Hearts. In this one, a young couple faces challenges in their relationship after giving birth to a child, and the father worrying that the mother isn't properly caring for the boy.
Who's monitoring the child's development?
My wife doesn't really trust doctors.
Goodbye. She's insane.
Mom, we're all she has, okay? This is my family.
Am I doing him good to get out of the house a little bit?
I'll take him outside. Anywhere that makes you happy.
Your son is in danger.
He's not absorbing any food. Do you hear me?
Why can't you trust me?
Enough!
What's happening?
She's obsessed with purity and cleanliness.
Why wouldn't you believe me? She's insane.
I have three kids. They're all three boys. My first son was not necessarily planned. We weren't not trying to get pregnant, but it wasn't like we were actively trying to get pregnant. And we always said, hey, if it happens, it happens. And it happened. And then from that point on, we actively decided to have the second kid 2 years later. And then 5 years later, we had another kid. And then we stopped because we're like, whoa, we're getting too old for this nonsense. But we were definitely ready to raise kids. In this movie, this couple's not. And it's very clear that they sort of stumble stupidly, in my opinion, into parenthood. But I guess this is somewhat realistic because this happens to a lot of people. People have, if you're going to actually have sex with somebody, you need to be prepared to have a kid with them. Use of condoms and birth control is great, but they can all fail. And if you're going to actually have a sexual relationship with somebody, you should be prepared to have kids with that person. Because that's what adults do. And then if you procreate and you have a baby with somebody, you're stuck with that person for at least 18 years. Until that baby is old enough to be on his or her own, you're stuck dealing with the other parent of that child. And this movie, I guess, kind of shows the cautionary tale of what happens if you are not prepared. And maybe you get married and you weren't ready to. And it also shows, even more terrifying for the parent, the crazy things that can happen and the nutty, crazy stuff that people get into when they become a parent. And in a way, this whole thing is kind of this microcosm of the people who don't vaccinate their kids. Cause the woman in the movie, the mother gets bonkers and doesn't want to go to the doctor and doesn't want to see a pediatrician and doesn't want to, and doesn't believe the growth charts and that the kids should be getting older and bigger. And she's obsessed with purity, but in a wonky, crazy Eastern medicine sort of way. And this feels like a sort of an allegory to the people who are like, well, I'm not going to vaccinate my kids, which is stupid to do. I'm sorry. I'll go on record right now and say, if you didn't vaccinate your kids, you're an idiot and you're endangering other people because of herd immunity. And there's a lot of scientific evidence for this. This shows the dumb decisions that people make and how hard it is to deal with them if the parents disagree. The other thing is this movie, I was expecting it to become similar to the movie Dear Zachary, which is a heart-wrenching film. I'm not going to tell you what happens to it, but it's a great movie. It's horrible to watch, especially as a parent. But Dear Zachary is a powerful film, and I really felt that this movie might have been going in that direction. And it really is a thriller because there's this husband and father who wants his kid to be healthy and in a lot of ways his hands are tied. And yeah, he doesn't take the proper steps to actually do the right things, but it's him trying to be diplomatic and how that doesn't always work. There are some problems with the movies. Part of it is it's very steeped in New York culture. And if you don't live in a crappy New York apartment and know that lifestyle, you don't relate to it as well. I will say this, and when you see it, it probably has the best meet cute I've ever seen in a movie, but then it gets very dark and weird. Tough to watch as a parent, but it's effective, even with its foibles of being overly steeped in narcissistic New York culture. I'm still going to say that Hungry Hearts kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Pixar's Inside Out, The Connection, and The Stranger.
There is something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, rolling ahead into the movie reviews. We're going to hit three this segment. One of them's a foreign film, so I'm not going to play a trailer for it because it's in French. And I'll get people saying, are you swearing? Somehow it turns into the Nazis. Are you swearing in your trailers that you're playing for the people on your radio? I don't know what happened there. Let's talk about Pixar. Inside Out, in Pixar's latest film, we see the inner emotions of a preteen girl who is dealing with having to move to a different city and facing adolescence.
I'm joy. This is sadness. That's anger.
What?
This is disgust. And that's fear. Ah! We're Riley's emotions. Woo-hoo! Yay! These are Riley's memories. They're mostly happy, you'll notice, not to brag.
I wanted to maybe hold one.
What happened? Sadness?
She did something to the memory.
Is everything okay?
I don't know.
Take it back, Joy.
I'm trying.
Joy, no.
Let's
wait.
Go.
The core memories.
No.
Can I say that curse word now?
Anyone who knows me knows I love Pixar. I have yet to see a bad Pixar movie. What's funny is when I originally saw Finding Nemo, I was not a big fan of it. But upon having to watch it 500 times with my son when it came out on DVD, it really grew on me. And I know there's a lot of people out there who kind of get down on Brave, mainly because I think the reason Brave is given, it won the Oscar, but I think it's given kind of a rough time by some critics is because it's the least Pixar-y movie and the most Disney princess-y movie of the Pixar canon. I even like Cars. I like Cars 2. I think Cars 2 is a better movie than Cars, actually. But with Pixar's Inside Out, it's directed by Pete Docter, and he did Up, which is a fantastic movie, one of the best movies of 2009, I think. This movie, though, is incredibly abstract. It's very high concept. Is it original? I don't know, because there was this TV show called Herman's Head back in the early 90s, and it's essentially Herman's Head. It's about these characters that live in this person's head, and they all represent a different emotion. That's essentially Herman's Head. So I'm going to dock Pete Docter a little bit for originality, but it's a fantastic portrayal of it. And this movie, like every other Pixar movie, it tugs at the heartstrings. It will make you laugh. It will make you cry. I challenge anybody to go into this movie and not weep at some point because it is so good at what it does and Pixar is so good at what it does. And it just takes those emotions. I mean, the movie's about emotions and the emotions, they're right there and they just grab you and they just reach in and they grab your heart and they go squeeze because that's what the Pixar movie does. Inside Out is a beautiful film. It makes you face a lot of your own emotions and how the emotions are oftentimes conflicting and mixed up. But like I said, it's extremely abstract. This is a movie that could not have been made even by Pixar 5 or 6 years ago because it is so hard to explain to somebody. I mean, you're like, it all takes place in their head and they're following these memories. It's extremely abstract, but it's also very easy to follow. I took all my kids to it. I have three kids. I've talked about them earlier in the show here and other episodes. They're 14, 12, and 7. And I said to them, who wants to go see Inside Out? Because I get a pass and I can usually bring only one person. And all three of them are like, I want to see it. Well, I got special consideration. I brought all three of my kids. So all four of us went and saw it. And we all loved it. I'm 43 all the way down to my 7-year-old. Loved the movie. And I'm sure that if I took somebody who is 60 or 70 years old, they'd probably love the movie too. Pixar is so unique in that they can make movies that everybody of all ages can enjoy. And Pixar's movie Inside Out, once again, they have had another fantastically beautiful movie worth seeing for kids or for adults. It's gorgeous. It's got a great cast, Amy Poehler as Joy, and it's got Phyllis Smith, who a lot of people don't recognize immediately. She's Phyllis from The Office, the heavyset, middle-aged, matronly woman with the curly black hair. That's her. You've got Mindy Kaling from The Office also. She plays Disgust in a very small part, but she does a great job in it. Bill Hader plays Fear. You've got Louis Black, who you would never expect to see in a kid's movie. He plays Anger, and he does a great job in it. And this is a wonderful movie. Go see it. It's worth checking out. Pixar's Inside Out totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Stranger. A mysterious visitor in a small town becomes hunted by a corrupt cop when he appears to be impervious to injury.
He's not a danger to anyone.
How do you know that?
The only danger here is you.
You told me you didn't know who he was.
I don't!
Why didn't you save him?
He was infected.
I don't know where you came from. But your life is gonna end.
If you touch me, I'll have to kill you.
Go!
So now you know what we are. We're humanity's death sentence.
This is presented by Eli Roth, and it is a horror movie. I was not a big fan of it. And I love horror movies, and I think there's been some really innovative horror movies. And this does some cool stuff with the legends. I don't want to give too much spoilers away because there's some reveals that happen in this movie. It's not just some guy who comes to town and is beaten up. And it's not your typical Eli Roth movie with torture porn and rapes and murders. The last time I saw an Eli Roth Presents movie, it was Aftershock. And that movie was just difficult to watch. I'm not a big fan of punishing the characters so you can punish the audience. And that's exactly what Aftershock was. Now, The Stranger has a little more going on, and it plays with certain conventions and tropes. And I've seen movies that play with these characters and tropes and these archetypes in horror films. Well, the problem is that it's such a depressing, punishing type of story where you've got this corrupt cop, and he's got this awful son. And I'm not saying that there aren't corrupt police officers in the world, but this one is just so egregious with what he does. It's unattractive and that's not fun. So I'm going to have to say The Stranger kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
The next movie I want to talk about is The Connection. It stars Oscar winner Jean Dujardin. I think I said that right. It's a French movie and he plays a French policeman trying to bust a drug kingpin in charge of connecting the dots between heroin and money in the French Connection drug ring of the 70s. Now, I think the biggest problem this movie has is actually connecting itself to the movie The French Connection. And that's not to say that The French Connection has a complete monopoly over the whole French Connection money drug scheme that happened in the 70s, because it doesn't. But it's the most famous version of it, and they're actively marketing this movie as the French version of The French Connection, and that's not what it is. The French Connection, not just the movie, but the whole French Connection itself, was this whole movement of drugs from, I think, Turkey to France to America. And it was this triangle trade that was going on. Now, it was made obviously famous by William Friedkin's movie, The French Connection. And while it has a little bit of a connection to it, you never have Popeye Doyle showing up. They even go to New York, but you never have Popeye Doyle showing up. And you expect that when they market it as this French version of The French Connection, you expect that to show up. And it never does. It kind of gives the French side to the entire process. And that's interesting. It really is. But it is very complex and at times convoluted, and it's a little bit hard to follow, especially if you go in expecting this to be just the French side of that whole story. So don't go in expecting the whole connection to The French Connection. Go in expecting a sort of 70s punchy cop movie, and it has some great scenes in it. It has some great construction of scenes. Like I said, it's a little bit hard to follow because these things are inevitably more complex than they ever appear in movies. ultimately, while The Connection is an interesting movie, it's brought over by Draft House Films, and there's mostly in French, some of it's in English, but most of it's in French. It's worth checking out, especially if you like that sort of punchy 70s version of drug movies, but ultimately it's cobbled by its own connection to The French Connection. So ultimately, I'm going to have to say that The Connection kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Yes Men Are Revolting, the box office, and the world-famous DVD Roundup.
Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Kevin Carr from Fat Guys at the Movies wrapping you up on the Fat Guys Show. Let's finalize things with one more final movie review. This is a documentary. It's called The Yes Men Are Revolting. Activist hoaxers known as the Yes Men continue their work, this time trying to bring attention to the issue of climate change.
The Yes Men!
The Yes Men.
They're an activist group of pranksters.
So go towards the machine gun and then left and you'll be at the UN. Everything will be fine.
It's not the way most people protest, but it's our way to say no to corporate greed.
I'm Eric Wolschlegel. I'm with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Are you here representing the U.S. Chamber of Commerce?
Yes, I am.
This guy is a fraud. He's lying. Can I see your business card?
Can I see yours?
Scientists are telling us this is the last chance to make a stand.
I have actually never seen a Yes Men movie. There's like two or three of them out already. I have not seen one of their films until now. So I'm coming to this without the context. And in a way that I think that makes a difference, because as I watched this, I just felt that this was somewhat incomplete. And it felt incomplete because you get the story of who the Yes Men are and more of details of what they are doing in their first couple films. So I don't hold that against this movie necessarily, because essentially it's a sequel. It's a third in a series. It wouldn't make good cinematic sense to go through the same thing that you had in the other two films. They do a decent job actually bringing you up to speed as to who these guys are and what their practice is. If you don't know who they are, they're these activists, and they're liberals, and they're environmentalists, they're anti-Wall Street kind of guys, and they do their activism by playing pranks and hoaxing and trying to get real journalists and real people to believe that they are actually those in charge and in control, saying outrageous things. And this time, they're targeting the environmental issues, in particular climate change. As a film, cohesively, just taken on its own, like I said, this is a little bit scattershot. It's a little bit unbaked at times. It just doesn't quite hold together. And a lot of it's because they're tackling one heck of an issue. And I recently, there have been quite a few movies that have come out dealing with climate change. I'm not even talking about Al Gore's film. I'm not even talking about An Inconvenient Truth. I'm talking about stuff like The 11th Hour and Cool It. And recently, I was talking about The Merchants of Doubt, which there's a lot of movies that are focusing on climate change. There's two huge problems, as I see it, from the climate change movies that I've been seeing. The first problem is they often misrepresent how things are. And generally, there's this push of saying, well, it shouldn't be politicized. This is about science, and everybody, and you got these people that are denying it, and it's all funded by big business and the oil and everything. And then when you look at, and this is what happened with Merchants of Doubt, when you look at their timeline, they're saying, they make it like, oh, these people just started coming up with these questions about climate change in like the late 80s and into the 90s, and no one takes it seriously. Don't politicize this. But the reality is this thing was politicized by environmentalists back in the 60s and 70s to an extreme level, to the level of, if we don't do something by the year 2000, all this stuff would happen. You can find stories and books and articles written back in the 60s and 70s preaching doom and gloom on the year 2000s, polar ice caps will melt, will rise sea levels, New York will be flooded, etc., etc. This stuff never came to pass in 2000. And when the extremists politicized it, and then it didn't come to pass, you're going to get skeptics, and it's going to then be hardwired into the system. That's why there's so many deniers out there, because all these predictions were made 20, 30 years ago, and none of them, or very few of them, came true. The other problem with these things is it's a very complex issue. Climate and the Earth and all that, it's very complex. And everything's being blamed on climate change, even stuff that isn't. Even stuff that obviously isn't. Like Hurricane Katrina. A lot of people blame that on climate. That has nothing to do with climate change. That has to do with the fact that there are bad levees and bad infrastructure in a city, and a hurricane happened to hit right at the right point in one of the lowest hurricane seasons. So there's a lot of bad arguments being made on all sides. Now, this all dovetails into the bigger problem is, what do you do about it? And every one of these movies I see, we got to do something, we got to do something, you got to do something. And when you ask for a plan, a lot of times the plans are, well, we can tax people more, or you should vote for candidates that are interested in doing something about climate change. There are actually very little solutions being offered in a lot of these movies. And that's frustrating, because it seems like at that point it just becomes a fundraising or political agenda thing. And in fact, in this movie, Yes Men Are Revolting, they go to Uganda and they talk to this woman who's an activist there, and she's like, oh, well, climate change is affecting us much more than Western nations. What's our big plan? Basically to tax the other nations, to have essentially climate reparations paid by America and Canada. They don't talk about Russia or China because they're not even interested. And that's really all it is. It's about money. And that's where it becomes specious. Now, the movie itself, The Yes Men Are Revolting, it's humorous enough. It falls into that humorous documentary style. And it's not quite Michael Moore, but it's a lark. That's really what it is. I mean, I think they're funny to watch at times, and they're funny to see, oh, we pulled a prank on somebody. But I question whether, you know, how effective this activism is. I think they make a good movie, and it makes good TV. But I don't know how effective the films are. I'm going to have to say The Yes Men Are Revolting kind of sucks. Third in a series. I didn't see the other ones. And it's a little bit malformed in terms of any sort of action it wants to take.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. And was I correct? Last week, I predicted the $115 million that Jurassic World would make. In the first 2 days, apparently, it made $209 million. It almost doubled what I said it was going to make. That is, by the way, a record. It broke the Avengers record from 3 years ago. $207 million was theirs. This is $209. Essentially the same kind of marketplace with very little inflation going on between the last 3 years. So it's a massive win for Universal, massive win for Jurassic Park. Everything else was secondary. Spy came in second with $15.5 million. It also made $500 million globally over the weekend, $500 million in just 3 days, which is fantastic and huge. Nobody was expecting it to do this well. And a lot of people are now scrambling, well, why is it? Why is it? And I think, yeah, it's nostalgia, but I don't think people are necessarily going for the nostalgia. And yeah, Chris Pratt's good in it, but I really don't know how many people made the overt decision to go see the movie because Chris Pratt was in it. I think it has more to do with the fact that they're dinosaurs. And it's been 14 years since we've had a Jurassic Park movie. That doesn't mean that we need to shelve the Marvel movies for 14 years so they can become big again. I think what happened is, after the first Jurassic Park came out in 1993, everything was about dinosaurs from that point on. Every movie had dinosaurs. They tried to fix them in on TV series and in movies and everywhere they could. And then you had the sequels that came out, and the last one came out in 2001. Dinosaurs are always going to be popular with kids, but then they weren't popular in movies, and it became robots and superheroes. So we're kind of getting something different. We don't have any dinosaur movies out there already. Oh, in the next 5 years, we're going to be plenty. But right now, it was a vacuum in the marketplace, and people went for it. On top of this, I think we got something different with this film. Yeah, there's death and destruction in the movie, and it's pretty intense at times, but it doesn't end with a giant metropolitan city being reduced to rubble. And it doesn't end with some alien threat coming down that we've seen multiple times before. It just offered something a little bit different. And I think people responded to that. And plus, it's a fun movie. So ultimately, Jurassic Park, I think, actually is going to win the weekend again this weekend with about $100 million. I mean, it could drop over 50%. It's still going to be at $100 million. And Inside Out's not going to be a slouch. It's going to come in second with like $70 million. And that's great. And that's a great opening for a Pixar movie. I mean, it's not going to win the weekend, but that the rank doesn't really matter at this point. The fact that Inside Out is going to probably make a $70 million weekend is good for Disney and good for Pixar. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into the world-famous DVD roundup. First one I want to talk about is The Lazarus Effect. That is out on DVD and Blu-ray. I actually kind of like this movie. It's a PG-13 horror movie, and it's very predictable, and you know everything that's going to happen in it, but it's effective for what it is. It falls into that realm of the kind of movies I love where people are in a lab trying to do good for humanity, and something goes horribly awry, and they originally thought, what could possibly happen? Well, bad things happen. One that worked less in sci-fi is Chappie. That's Neil Blomkamp's latest film, which was decent enough. It has some good stuff to it, but it has some pretty awful stuff in it as well. It's about a robot that becomes self-aware. But the problem is he went for an R rating, and he got really hardcore in certain parts of it, when really this would have worked better as a kid's movie. And you know, it's like a short circuit for today's. But it didn't work out that way. Run All Night, Liam Neeson kicking butt, which is... You know, he does that. He's good at that. Unfinished Business is actually a funnier comedy than I expected, with Vince Vaughn and Tom Wilkinson and David Franco as businessmen trying to win an account in Amsterdam. Beyond the Reach, which is just okay. Michael Douglas hunting a human out in the desert. And Wild Tales, which is surprisingly really cool. It's an Argentinian anthology movie about death. And then finally, the stinker of the week is 2.5 Men season 12. That's the final season of 2.5 Men. That one really ran it into the ground. I thought the show was actually more clever than most people did up until the end. And then just these last couple seasons just have been terrible. And that's it for the week. I will talk to you all next week when I review Ted 2, Max, and Big Game. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.